The new New South Wales Labor leader, Jodie McKay, has announced the new shadow ministry for the state. It includes some new interesting portfolios. Better public services is one, carers and volunteers and active transport, and the gig economy for the first time. That portfolio was awarded to Daniel Mucki, MLC. He's the Shadow Minister for Finance and Small Business and also the Shadow Minister for the Gig Economy. Daniel, thanks for being here.
Thank you for having me on.
Tell us how this portfolio came about.
Well, it's a very, very interesting gig, must I say. It's reflective.
Pardon
the pun. Of course. It is very much reflective of, I think, the direction that New South Wales Labor is taking, particularly under the leadership of Jodie McKay, who was elected on the weekend. It's very future-focused. It's very people-focused. It's designed to sort of address the challenges that the state is facing right now. And one of the challenges that we are facing is workplace disruption as well as economic disruption. We do have Sydney and New South Wales is one of the leading jurisdictions in the world for the gig economy. We have one of the highest rates of take-up. This is a good thing. We do, of course, want innovation and we do, of course, want change. But we don't want that at the expense of people's rights. 7% of people in Australia and 7.4% of people in Sydney are deriving some element of income from the gig economy. And what we want to say to those people, as we do to all the people who use our services, is yes, you can have a race to the top on innovation, but it should be accompanied with a race to the top on people's pay and conditions as well.
Does that mean that their pay and conditions should align with concomitant pay and conditions from an employee?
Well, I start with the basic principle from what type of outcome do we want? We want everybody who puts in any bit of work to be able to support themselves and their family in a way which is fair and sustainable. So when I look at that type of questions, I don't necessarily think that we have to make a decision like that straight away. What I do think we have to do is just focus on what we'd like the gig economy to deliver. We want it to deliver excellent services for people who wish to use them, but we also want them to deliver fairness for those who work within it. And so just last week, I was talking to a driver with Uber, and they were talking about how they've been on the platform for 5 years, how it's been excellent to be able to suit their hours of work. But they did make the point that every time they're sick, every time they don't get paid, every time they want to take a holiday, they're out. And they were making the point to me that they had 3 children. It was their responsibility to help support. And they were just saying, quite basically, all we're asking for is what everybody else is expecting, is we want the ability to be able to enjoy our work, have a fair measure of control of when we work. We want to provide excellent services, but we also want to be able to look after our family and ourselves as well.
If you have any questions for the new Shadow Minister for the Gig Economy, who's also the Shadow Minister for Finance and Small Business, feel free to give us a call, 1300 222 702. This is your chance to get Labor's outlook on the evolving economy, on the changing shape of what having a job looks like in New South Wales, or shoot us a text, 0467 922 702. We're speaking with Daniel Mucki, who's an Upper House parliamentarian. Upper House parliamentarian in New South Wales and the newly appointed Shadow Minister for the Gig Economy. If you were to guarantee Uber drivers holiday pay, isn't that sort of having your cake and eat it too? You want the flexibility of being able to be part of the gig economy without all the duties and obligations that come along with being an employee, but you also want the benefits of being an employee.
Well, I don't want to single out Uber, but I will just make this point. If you look around all the cities around the world, there's now up to about 150 cities, which I think that particular company works within. And this is not too dissimilar to what is happening in already a lot of these jurisdictions. And a lot of these companies are already coming to some form of an arrangement with their workforce to allow this. Just in New South Wales alone, credit where credit is due, we had freelancer.com and Unions New South Wales be able to conclude an agreement that provided for the first time recommended rates and was able to provide some form of guidance as to how you should be treating people who are working in your home. I think that's the type of example of cooperation which we should expect with the gig economy. I don't think the gig economy is pitted towards conflict. I don't think there needs to be a stoush between labour and capital in a traditional sense. The type of behaviour we want to encourage is, of course, cooperation, but it's got to be focused on outcomes. We do want people to be able to enjoy the services. We do want people to have choice. We want that for both consumers and we want that, of course, for the people who work on those platforms. But right now, we don't have any regulatory framework. We don't have the government at all, be it in New South Wales or Canberra, prepared to actually change the way we think about regulation to suit the conditions which are emerging. So you tend to have both at a federal level and at a state level with a lot of these agencies, them applying 20th century thinking to 21st century problems. And that's the type of behaviour we want to change. And what the reason why I've been appointed to this position by Jodie is to to make it very clear that under her leadership and under the New South Wales Labor's direction that we're taking, we do want to be focused on the future. We want to be relevant. We want to make sure that we are addressing the problems that people are experiencing right now.
Paul in Haberfield has sent us a text saying, can you ask how superannuation works under the gig economy? How would you have it work?
Well, I do think that people ought to have a right to superannuation. I think just because it is a matter of law that you are entitled to have a contribution to your retirement. Now,
but wouldn't they? Sorry to interrupt, but if I'm self-employed or if I'm a sole trader, then I still already have an obligation to pay myself superannuation out of the income that I earn, right?
Yeah, and that's a classic example of what I'm talking about—a 20th century sort of approach. Because you do, and it's no different for a person who's participating in this platform. If you were to believe the ATO, if you were to believe the other authorities, it's their responsibility to be able to put aside some of their income towards superannuation and pay it themselves. Which, you know, we would obviously welcome and would obviously encourage people to do, but we are sensible and practical about it and we're listening to people. So when I was talking to that driver from Uber last week, he just made the point that yes, when he can put money into superannuation, he does, but when his bills come up and when his kids' excursions come up and he has to pay a bit of extra, yeah, that's one of the first things he has to dip into. And it's not just him. There are other people who I've spoken to as well who've had the same type of issue. I was talking to a person who was working on freelancer.com and she made the same point. Every time that there's an unexpected cost that comes, superannuation is one of the first things which they dip into and they just don't make that contribution. So that's what we have to do is we can either do one of two things. We can either punish that person for not obeying the law themselves. We could either go after the company for not being able to pay extra. Or my approach, which is I'd like to sort of see whether there's possible to be some sort of synthesis. I'd like to be able to talk to everybody in the sector to just see whether or not that type of problem could be addressed jointly. But the difference between sort of my approach and Labor's approach and the government's is we do think there's a responsibility here for the government to do something. We do think it's responsible to have an appropriate regulatory framework so there is a race to the top on not just services but equally people's pay and conditions.
What might that look like? Because, I mean, part of the problem with the gig economy is that courts have already ruled in many jurisdictions that, you know, an Uber driver, for example, let's just take the case of Uber, I'm not only talking about Uber, but, you know, it's the easiest, biggest example, is not an employee of Uber. So let's transpose the obligations that Uber might have to supplying superannuation to its drivers to the case of me going online and wanting to find a gardener to prune my hedges and tidy up my yard. Is it conceivable that I would have an obligation to pay a superannuation loading on someone who comes to clean up my yard?
I don't think that type of arrangement is the type of arrangement which people
Why would
are
it apply?
Towards.
Why would it not apply to that but apply to Uber?
Well, but see, I look at an example that you're talking about there and kind of go, there are parallels where this problem has presented itself before for which there are solutions. So in New South Wales, for example, very few people know this, but we do have in our Industrial Relations Act in New South Wales a special provision, for example, owner drivers, people who own their own trucks. And we do have an entirely established stable system that has existed from 1979 that has sort of answered that question. And the way in which it approaches that is it brings together the parties, it forms a sort of a minimum contract standards that is imposed, it sort of applies that obligation to the people most capable of bearing them, and then on top of that does provide for things like holiday pay, superannuation, but equally for a truck driver, maintenance. My own background, for example, is before I was in Parliament, I spent a lot of time working for the union that represented truck drivers. And that's part of the reasons why I've sort of myself have a special passion for this. But I have seen examples of that type of regulation and that type of innovation, which is possible when you do have a cooperative approach, but you do have a government that's prepared to accept its obligation, which is to supervise the market fairly. And that's where I think the approach that I'd like to take. So I'm not, you know, immediately going to be saying here, well, you know, if you happen to be hiring a person in a garden, then you must do so, so and so. But I am saying definitely the platform that provides that service, the people who are on that, yes, there are some obligations that they have to recognise.
Right, and so it might actually be the interface that I'm using to find the gardener that might have obligations.
It might be, yes. Yeah. And if you look at what, say, the example that Freelancer did within New South Wales just in the last year or so, that's the type of arrangement which they struck. And that is the type of arrangement that they struck at a voluntary level where they both negotiated it to a point of mutual benefit. So that's what I kind of uphold as a model behaviour that we'd like to see emulated elsewhere. But the difference between sort of that, Freelancer is subject to incredible levels of competition from other people like Airtasker, for example. And so when I look at those type of companies, it's a dynamic economy and we want it to be a dynamic economy. We want those services to be able to be there and we want that choice to be there for people who are consumers. But the government does have an obligation here and the critique that I lay at the the feet of the current Berejiklian government is that they've got their head in the sand on this. They aren't actually recognising that this is a moment in time. We can design the market right now. We can put in place a regulatory framework right now, which would encourage the very best behaviour from the inception of these industries. And I think if you go back to, say, for example, the Industrial Revolution, if you kind of think that if at that point, when we knew what was coming, we were able to put in place the right levels of laws, we could have avoided a lot of conflicts. This is why I'm excited about the job. And this is why I'm excited about the opportunity to serve in this role. It's why I'm excited that this is the direction Jody Mackay is taking New South Wales Labor.
We're speaking with Daniel Mookey, MLC, the Shadow Minister for Finance and Small Business, who's been appointed the Shadow Minister for the gig economy. Someone on the text line, Trevor, has written in saying, what is the gig economy? Please explain. So the gig economy, just very quickly, is things like Uber or Airtasker, where people are working in a freelance capacity and they're not actually employees, and more people are earning a bit of money on the side or even having an entire job as sole traders than used to be the case. Dave in Kirkhall writes on the text line, instead of focusing on benefits, let's educate people on what being a contractor actually entails, because there's a lot of ignorance out there. If you want benefits, get a full-time job. If you want a contract, you go for you trade those benefits for freedom. It's not rocket science. It sounds, Daniel, like you're saying there might be an interim way, which is neither one nor the other. Let's just take a couple of calls quickly. Steve's called in from Paddington. G'day, Steve.
G'day. How are you, Josh?
Good. What do you reckon?
I was driving with my kids last night, and there's a lot of bike riders delivering food in our part of the world, and none of them, or I'd suggest that 60% plus of them, had no safety equipment on their bikes at all. It was dark. They didn't even have lights on the front of their bikes. These are people who are driving down William Street, New South Head Road, you know, major roads, no protection at all. There's no requirement for high-vis gear, for example, reflective equipment. And I just said to my kids, I said, for a job like that, they can't even afford to buy the equipment for themselves. These are, that you know, probably like a lot of poor university students, possibly migrant university students, who are just desperately trying to get whatever work they can get. And I'm thinking, well, how can we actually let that happen? And again, in terms of responsibility, the company takes no responsibility to ensure that there's a minimum standard for the people who are going to go and do the job and what they're doing with it. And then if those people get charged with an offence, then they're going to have to wear that cost as well. It's not a workplace-related one because they're in this gig economy, so they're not an employee, so they can't even claim, you know, responsibility for their employer for doing it. They just seem completely exposed physically and, you know, and otherwise, and it just seemed terrible to me. I said to my kids, I don't want you ever to do that job.
Thanks for the call, Steve. Great to talk to you. So there's obviously going to be safety considerations as well. Daniel, thanks for coming in. I just want to move on to questions about Warragamba Dam, which you're not going to want to get embroiled in. But congratulations on the gig, so to speak, and it's good to talk to you.
Thank you for having me on.
You got it. That's Daniel Mookey, who's the Shadow Minister for Finance and Small Business, Shadow Minister for the Gig Economy.